Now we know it's coming down to two teams for the Denver Nuggets who they're going to face on Sunday night. Round one, game one, 8:30, nice and late there for you, Angel. It's either going to be the Oklahoma City Thunder or the Minnesota Timberwolves. As the Thunder beat the Pelicans last night, 123-118. Angel, I'm sitting at 3-1. How are we feeling? You and I both lost in the Toronto one. You got one win or two wins? You got one? Is your mic on? You don't think your mic's on.
One. Hello.
Hello. There it is. All right. Well, that's the start. We don't have anything tonight. We got stuff on Friday.
There's like nothing tonight.
There's nothing tonight. Sad. No Rockies. Nothing to complain about there. No NBA play-in games tonight. You got NHL. The Avs are trying to lock up their side of the division, and we'll see kind of how that locks up, you know, on the central side. Dallas moved right above them. They're at 106 points. The Avs are at 105. So we got a tight race, and I'm going to go into some of that and how that looks for the Avs and what really needs to happen for them to lock up the central division in the Western Conference. We'll get into that. How are you feeling about these two teams potentially for the Denver Nuggets? The Minnesota one to me has a lot of tangled webs as far as Tim Conley, his time with the Nuggets, and then of course he signed the 5-year pretty big deal with the Minnesota Timberwolves. That would be a story. That would be a fun story. Is there anyone you're rooting for in particular? Like, Angel, take two sides of your brain here. One side rooting for the most interesting storyline, interesting series, and then the other side that's like the fan side. Who are the Nuggets? Who do they have a better chance to just kind of blow past?
I think they have a better chance of blowing past OKC.
I think so.
They're a good team, but they're young. They play with a lot of heart, play with a lot of energy. But throughout a 7-game series against a veteran team like the Nuggets, I don't think that's going to go well. But in terms of storyline, yeah, it's got to be Minnesota. I mean, you get your former GM to come in, play against the series against them, against, I guess, his former protege in Calvin Booth. So I think that would be the more interesting storyline.
Yeah, no question about it. And I'm guessing Rudy Gobert's playing tomorrow night, right? I mean, he was suspended for the Tuesday game. I don't see any reason why they would suspend him for multiple games unless the NBA intervenes by chance. But yeah, this is going to set up really interesting because Minnesota, what were they, 40? I think they were just a couple of games above 500. The Thunder were a couple of games below 500. The Thunder, they just present this nothing to lose mentality, and sometimes those teams are dangerous. They can be, like historically, I don't know. 8 seeds don't beat 1 seeds. It just doesn't happen. The Nuggets did it, of course, with Dikembe and company against the Seattle Supersonics, the George Karl-led Seattle Supersonics. So, the odds of it happening aren't very good, but still, the Thunder present a flat-out nothing-to-lose mentality. And I think that's what you saw last night against the Pelicans. You got a lot of young dudes, a lot of young guys on this team that are probably going to be, like, is Josh Giddey and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, like, are those two guys going to be the next kind of household names? I mean, Giddey is, 20 years old? He's a young dude. Shai is like, how old is he, dude? He was drafted, he's 23 or 24. So he's still pretty dang young, too. But I was watching that game. I watched the full game. It was a lot of fun, actually. I mean, the Thunder went up fairly big at one point, or the Pelicans went up fairly big at one point. The Thunder kind of went up big, especially in that third. They outscored New Orleans 39-23 or something like that. And then it was a great fourth quarter. And so have you had fun watching these play-in games? Have they been entertaining to you? Or is it kind of just like, yeah, these are bad teams that aren't going to do anything, so we're just kind of biding our time this week until we actually get into the playoffs? But I'm telling you, man, the Thunder, that might be a team to watch out for. I don't have the name of their general manager on hand, the Thunder, but he is piecing together a young team that just might be in the thick of things, you know, for a long time to come now. I mean, Giddey, fun player to watch. Gil, just obviously a fun player to watch. He's got a killer instinct. But they played fearless basketball last night. They played like a team that's like, dude, nobody really expected us to do much of anything. Here we are. We're going up against the Pelicans. No Zion, of course. But we, you know, I think they were 6.5-point dogs. And here we are. I think they were a fearless team. And that's my fear with them, is that they would come in with that mindset of, you know, it really doesn't matter. You know, and sometimes when you can play with that looseness, then you can, that's when you can be kind of scary. That's when you can kind of upset some teams, when not everything is so tense and you're prone to turnovers. You look at the Pelicans last night, I don't know who that was, but the Pelicans were down, they were down just, what, three, and they got the ball. There's 12, 11, 10 seconds left, I don't know, something like that. And then whoever threw it in bounds, trying to get McCollum. McCollum's trying to get a running start, and they weren't on the same page, and he just throws it out of bounds. I think there was like 3 seconds left. And I was really hopeful, just for, even though I picked OKC, just kind of wanted to see a little overtime, some fireworks maybe, and they throw it out of bounds. And that's it. Thunder get the ball back in, they get fouled, make both free throws, OKC wins 123-118, and that set it up for Friday night. I haven't looked at the lines yet between these two teams. I'm guessing Minnesota's going to be the favorite. But yeah, throughout the show today, I'm going to talk a little bit about Tim Connelly. And I just want you to think about this. We'll hit this later on in the program, but is Tim Connelly, is he as good as, like, I've always praised Tim Connelly. You know, you assembled a team after you took over the team after Masai Ujiri and George Karl left the team or were removed from the team. He hires Brian Shaw, and that was bad. It was a bad move. All the stuff that kind of worked around that were bad moves. But then, you know, he kind of recovered, fixed his mistake fairly early in the process. And then, the rest is kind of history. You hired Michael Malone. You drafted Nikola Jokic in the second round. He had a lot of misses, though, too. So we always, you know, our boy Dixon and a lot of the naysayers about John Elway on Joe like to say, well, John Elway wouldn't have been a good GM if he wouldn't have gotten lucky and signed Peyton Manning. Well, does the same go for Tim Connelly? Tim Connelly admits that it was luck that he didn't anticipate Nikola Jokic to be a thing. Hell, dude, Joker couldn't even play for the Nuggets that first year because there was some Serbian stuff and he was still playing and under some kind of different contract. So he didn't even play the first, which would have been his rookie year. He still was in Serbia. And that was under Brian Shaw. Maybe that was good for him, not having to be around Brian Shaw. But is it fair to say Tim Connelly, without Nikola Jokic, that team would have been, and I don't know what it would be now, but the idea was it was going to be Emmanuel Mudiay and Yusuf Nurkic. That was the way it was supposed to go. They drafted Emmanuel Mudiay at number 7. They passed up on drafting Devin Booker, which obviously we didn't know Devin Booker was going to be what he is. But they get Emmanuel Mudiay. I think the year before that, they got Yusuf Nurkic. So it was supposed to be Emmanuel Mudiay and Yusuf Nurkic are going to be the future of this team. Well, you refreshed. You recharged it. And then you got Jamal Murray and Nikola Jokic. I think Murray was the very next year. So is that fair to say, if it hadn't been for Connelly kind of stumbling into the Nikola Jokic thing, would the Nuggets be as well off as they are right now? I think that's obvious because you got lucky and got a once-in-a-lifetime player. However, I feel like Connelly did a good job of drafting around him. I mean, he drafted Gary Harris, which Harris was a big part of the Nuggets and their growth and their rise with Michael Malone. He was a big part of that. Will Barton, you can love him or hate him, but he did trade for him. Barton was a part of that, too, as you tried to establish a consistent playoff team. That was the first step. And I thought Tim Connelly, in a fairly short turnaround, you know, he screwed up with Brian Shaw, but then you hire Michael Malone, and after that, everything just got a little bit better. So we'll talk about that throughout the show today. Anjo, let's get to the good, the bad, the ugly, presented by FMS Bank, banking made simple. For more on FMS Bank, check them out online at fmsbank.com. Again, that's fmsbank.com/KFK. And I'm going to say this. The good was, you know, in the NBA is different. You're not going to get many Rudys. You're not going to get a lot of Rudy stories. Just it's a sport that doesn't lend itself to that. A seven-game series, a best of seven, you're not going to see a lot of Rudys coming out of nowhere. The OKC Thunder, though, that's been a fun team to watch, an enjoyable team to watch. And, you know, that was one of the, I think that was probably the only full Thunder game I've watched of the season. And they got some players. So I'm going to say that's my good today. And here's, is this a bad, I put bad question mark. And we want to talk about this today. A lot of teams are doing this. The Colorado Rockies just announced, after monitoring the effects of the 2023 MLB rule changes at Coors Field and other ballparks across Major League Baseball, the Rockies will extend alcohol sales at Coors Field from the seventh inning to the end of the eighth inning, beginning with the team's next home game on April 17th. Now, Phillies pitcher Matt Strom had some interesting things to say about it, and I'll read that in a moment. We'll get to it, but is it bad or just... what comes to the top of your head? Good thing or bad thing to basically extend this thing out so that you have until the end of the eighth inning to get your last brewski or so? We'll leave that one up to you guys. Maybe that would be a good poll question on a Friday. And the ugly angel, yet again, the Colorado Rockies. We're going to throw them in there. Errors continue to just... I mean, what was that? The situation with C.J. Cron. I mean, his foot was just off of first base. He received the throw in the eighth inning, and then he broke towards the second base hole on a chopped grounder. And then he ended up having to turn around, sprint back to the bag. So he didn't get the easy out there. And then the very next play, you get the a two-run shot there that ultimately won the game. Opposite field homer with two outs. Off the Rocky side armor, Justin Lawrence. So, error, we've seen that like five times so far, where it feels like the Rockies are going to win a game. All they got to do is make a routine play. And then an error, you know, whether it's Ryan McMahon or C.J. Cron in that situation, it extends the inning. And you can't do that. If you're not a great team right now, you can't do that. You extend the inning, and then they pay for it the very next play. We've seen that a couple of times now for the Rockies. So, as Tanner would say, he's going to view that as the glass half full, that, man, you're just not doing the little things right. This is a decent team, and once you can clean those things up, then you could be good. And I suppose that's one way of looking at it. My fear with this team is, what's been kind of solid that we didn't think was going to be solid this year? Is the bullpen. But conventional wisdom just tells me, especially in Denver, that over time, you're going to see the bullpen deteriorate. This is where you should be pitching well in your bullpen. And I just think over time it's going to deteriorate. So hopefully you're starting pitching, you know, your Kyle Freelands and Marquez gets back, and then you can get some success out of guys like Austin Gomber and things like that. So the pressure is going to, to me, going to start building on starting group, on the starting rotation. I don't see how the bullpen can hold up. First Advantage text line, 888-530-0043. Our tight-knit brewing poll question of the day. And again, I just thinking randomly, watching NBA play-in games throughout the week and how things have changed from the 80s and 90s. And then Kevin Durant's comments about, you know, the 80s and 90s basketball. The reason it was considered so tough and physical was because they didn't call flagrant fouls. So my question today is, and you can go vote at theholeshow.com, is the NBA product better today on this 13th day of April than it was in the 80s and 90s? And I think yes, it absolutely is. Go vote at theholeshow.com. Let's see where this thing ends up. 20 minutes after the hour, take a short break here. The NHL playoff watch, at least at this stage, what does it mean for the Colorado Avalanche, as they got a couple of games left, and there's still much to figure out what they have to do. We'll talk about that next. It's the whole show powered by PDC Energy. We're on Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
The Avalanche, the Nuggets, the playoffs. Follow the action with us on Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
This is Nico Medved, the men's basketball coach of the Colorado State Rams, and you're listening to The Hull Show on 1310 KFKA.
Got our game beer of the week, courtesy of our friends over at On the Rocks Liquor. From New Belgium Oak Spire, Four Roses Bourbon Barrel Aged. You want to check this out. 9% ABV. So one of those things might make your, you know, we got the weekend coming up. Might set your weekend up perfectly. Game beer of the week, courtesy of On the Rocks Liquor. They're half a mile south of Highway 34. They're on 47th Avenue. They got free wine and beer tastings throughout the weekends as well, so you can always try something new. Maybe you're in that mode where you're like, eh, I'm not really liking my old stuff anymore. Want to try something very new, local, supporting local breweries. I was just having an interesting conversation about that with someone the other day about alcohol being available in the supermarkets and stuff, the Walmarts of the world. And it's true. It's there. It's all full level alcohol, all that stuff. But they don't have the selection. The selection's not going to be there. They have some craft beer available for you, but they're not going out like our liquor stores and working with these breweries on a nonstop basis. I mean, that's a huge part of their business, is going out, figuring out, you know, the hot breweries in the area. How do we get their beer into our liquor store? I mean, you're getting the corporate, the big time supermarkets are just like, all right, what's the number one and two, three, maybe? Let's get those in here. And that's not always the case for everybody, because what I like is not what you like necessarily. So that's what I love about the options still at your local liquor store. On the Rocks Liquor, and they're supporting local businesses too. A lot of these breweries, man, they bust their tails to make it work. And you got your local liquor stores like On the Rocks Liquor that's just adding a little extra oomph to their business model. First Advantage, text line 888-530-0043. Texter here, Dixon, I'll take OKC. I think the Nuggets defense matches up better with them than against Cat, Gobert, Edwards, and Conley. Those bigs can cause Joker some issues and are rim protectors. Joker doesn't jump. Shot blockers cause him issues. Well, I've always said, you know, if you're betting, if you play the ponies much and you bet and you're looking at a Joker over underline and all that stuff, I always said, look at their number two. Who's their power forward? Because a lot of times you're going to get that number one, that center, going up one-on-one with the Joker, but you might see that power forward staying back and double teaming or coming in for a shot block opportunity, things like that. Minnesota's one of those teams you watch out for. In the regular season, I was never crazy about taking any kind of over-underline with Nikola Jokic against the Minnesota Timberwolves when Karl Anthony Towns was healthy and Rudy Gobert. So, I mean, either way you want to slice this, they both have compelling stories, I think, as far as why they could be trouble for the Nuggets. But just conventional wisdom tells me that they would sweep the Thunder. I would just say they sweep the Thunder. I mean, maybe you get the gentleman sweep there, but Minnesota, I could see that going six. You know, that would provide a little more of a challenge. I would, yeah, let's go OKC. I'm kind of, are you rooting for them then? That's what you're rooting for tomorrow. You want the Thunder to upset the Minnesota Timberwolves. And they could. I was watching did you watch the broadcast last night? Did you watch? Was this on ESPN? Oh, man, if the Pelicans can get past the Thunder, they might just be able to upset the Nuggets in the first round. I'm like, think about what you just said. If they can get past the Thunder in a play-in game, they could upset the Nuggets in the first round. I mean, some of the stuff that comes out of the four-letter network, man, I don't understand it. I just don't get it. And, you know, they're doing everything they can to try to set the Nuggets aside. They're playing at 8:30 on Sunday. If that doesn't tell you, and again, it's the first seed versus the eighth seed, so generally, that's the worst matchup of your playoffs is 1 versus 8. So I'm not going to give them that hard of a time on that one, because typically that's just not your better matchup. But yeah, still, it's your number one seed. It's your two-time MVP, your back-to-back MVP, and you're going to have to stay up late if you want to watch this thing. First Advantage text line 888-530-0043. And in the games, the four games that played the Timberwolves four times, you kind of just look back and you want to see, how did the Nuggets fare in that game? Well, they lost the first matchup, 124-111. Nikola Jokic had 24 points, 9 assists, and 7 rebounds. Good game. Good game for the Joker. Second game they played, they won 122-118. No Karl Anthony Towns in that game. Joker had 31 points, 13 assists, and 11 rebounds. So, again, when I'm talking about Anthony Towns and Gobert paired up, that's the matchup that kind of scares me a little bit. But for the most part, yeah, I mean, Joker, they lost to them the third game, 128-98. Joker didn't play in that game. And then the final game of the season, I believe they won big. That was like, they scored like 150 points or something like that. And Joker had 20 points, 16 assists, and 12 rebounds. So I think it's fair to say through three games where Joker played, he didn't dominate necessarily, but he was solid in those games. Now the Nuggets didn't see Karl Anthony Towns at all in the regular season because he was out forever. I mean, I think the game they won 122-118, you didn't have Gobert in that game either. So make no mistake, I mean, this can be a little bit of a tricky matchup for the Nuggets and, you know, against Minnesota. But I just think that this is going to be a better team that's dialed in. I know the last month was a little rocky for the Nuggets, and I didn't like it either. I'd feel a lot better if it wasn't. I still feel like this team will roll either way, but I could see this series. I could see the Timberwolves kind of making this something. If you can take a team to six games, then you've at least made the series something. First Advantage text line, 888-530-0043. 31 minutes after the hour. We'll talk some CSU Rams. Still haven't got on the NHL playoff standing, so we'll look at that in a moment, too. But Kevin's going to join us next from the Colorado. And what did he see in practice today for this football team? And also, a lot of Rams fans are kind of freaking out about the fact they're not seeing any names popping over to CSU at this stage. So we'll talk to him about that on the other side. 31 minutes after the hour, let's get the latest on the local Sports Flash.
This is Clay Millen, quarterback for the Green and Gold, and you're listening to The Whole Show on 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
We have the one and only Kevin Lytle from the Fort Collins, Colorado, and joining us now, he is our CSU Rams insider. Kevin, I want to get into some football with you, man, but I follow your Twitter. I stalk your Twitter. People are freaked out a little bit on the basketball side of things that they aren't seeing names coming in, whether that's through the portal or whatever. Is their freak out justified or warranted here, or are we okay? Should we calm down?
Yeah, I've seen something, you know, panic, if you will, from fans of, you know, we haven't signed anyone. What's going on? You know, because you have seen some teams, you know, get commits and whatever. The things I would say is, one, it's still very early. I mean, the national championship was, what, like 12 days ago or something like that? So we're barely into the offseason, too. I mean, you still see big names entering the portal now, you know, and Keyshawn Johnson from San Diego State just entered. So, you know, the portal is adding players still. You know, it's not like it's a static thing now. So, no, I don't think, you know, there's no award for who signed the most players earliest. You just need to make sure you sign the right players. You know, so obviously a big, you know, question is, oh, you know, will they get the right players? I can't, you know, I don't have that answer. We don't know that yet. But just because no one is signed isn't necessarily a bad thing, or the roster is doomed or whatever. All the challenges that we knew, you know, are existing, you know, the uncertainty about Isaiah Stevens and what he'll do, you know, talent battles in NIL, all that exists. But it doesn't mean that because it's April 13th and CSU hasn't signed anyone, doesn't mean that the, you know, we're doomed for another bad season next year. So I really don't worry about what a roster looks like until the end of May. So that's my big thing is, you know, yeah, we don't know for sure if they're going to sign all the perfect guys, you know, to get back to the NCAA tournament, but just because they haven't done it by April 13th does not mean anything, you know, bad or any, you know, foreboding future.
Kevin, don't you think, too, like, this is going to probably go in the category of a good problem to have. It's like a double-edged sword for the Rams. Last year with David Roddy, you know, he's going to test the waters and see where he stacks up in the NBA. Isaiah Stevens is doing the same thing. And you've talked to coaches, I've talked to coaches, and they kind of say the same thing. It's like, yeah, we wouldn't want it to be the opposite, where we don't have guys with those opportunities. But that being said, it does put us behind the eight ball. Because, you know, those positions are harder to recruit for because, A, you don't know if you're necessarily going to need to fill that position, and, B, stud players aren't looking at it going, yeah, I want to come here and be a backup to Isaiah Stevens, or last year come be a backup to David Roddy. So, it's a good problem to have, but it's still kind of a problem, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely, especially, for instance, I know CSU was recruiting, a guy like Cam Martin, a big man from Kansas. He was a D2 All-American prior to Kansas. He has 1 year to play. But the uncertainty, if he knew for sure he'd be playing with Isaiah, that would probably make it a little more attractive. But the uncertainty certainly can steer people, to look elsewhere. And he ended up, in Boise, which, is kind of a double whammy. That's a conference rival. But situations like that and the ones you mentioned of, okay, if Zay goes, you probably need a guard. But what guard can you get to come in if you don't know if Zay is going to be gone? Because, like you say, they'll just come and sit behind Isaiah if he's back. So, yeah, it is some of that. But you also have the ability to point to Isaiah and David Roddy and say, hey, look, we're developing pros every year here. So it's not a bad place to play ball and develop your game. So, yeah, it's just so complicated. There are just so many factors to this. I get it as fans. It's easy to be reactionary and, after a bad season, kind of have the doom and gloom view, and after a great season, have the we're the best thing in the world view. But it's always kind of in the middle, and just so many complicated factors right now in play in this recruiting process.
It makes me wonder, too, maybe this isn't possible, but if the NBA and the NCAA could work something out where we don't have to extend. Because when's the deadline, Kevin, for Isaiah to know whether he's going into the draft or not?
Yeah, if he's going to return to school, he has to announce it by May 31st, I believe it is, or June 1st, basically the end of May.
Yeah.
If it drags all the way till then, and that's what it is with David Roddy, because he was such a unique situation, it really does put a college team behind the eight ball, because by then, a lot of those best players are taken, and you don't have that many options. That's why when I say, if you're worrying about a roster in mid-April, it's kind of silly, but at the end of May, that is legit, because that's when most of the players have kind of found their new home. So it does make it really difficult. I don't know the perfect solution other than kind of what you're suggesting, try and move the date up. But the NBA, the NBA doesn't care about college rosters, so they're not going to do that.
Yeah, and that's so frustrating, too, because, for the NBA, if they would think deeper about it, a guy like Isaiah, maybe he's forced to, he takes so long in the decision where he's kind of like, I'm a bubble guy, either or, I could get drafted, I might not, or I go back another year, we'll see. I just think that if you set some of these teams up so they kind of have an idea of where what kind of team they're going to be, it would make those players better, their rosters better, therefore yielding a better crop coming into the NBA the following season. So I don't see what the harm would be in moving it back a month or whatever, because that would, to me, a month would change everything as far as these guys that are contemplating whether they go into the draft or not.
Yeah, it would make a big impact, but, the logical answer and the real answer, unfortunately, of course, aren't going to end up going together, because, like I say, the NBA just doesn't care. They want to go on their timeline, and they, for them, that's all that they really care about, and they clearly seem happy with how it's going. And, in the NBA's defense, in some ways, doing all the pre-draft evals right now as the regular season's ending and the playoffs are starting would be very tough from their end. So, again, this is why all these things are just so complicated. There just is not a 100% easy solution to any of it, whether it's who CSU is recruiting and landing or the timeline, all of it. Just a lot of different factors involved.
It's a complex job being a coach in college sports, and it just keeps getting more complex as we grow this thing. Kevin, I hate that I'm even asking this, because like you said, last year we were riding high. It was Roddy's getting drafted in the first round, Isaiah Stevens is still returning. This team, maybe they're not a tournament team, but they should be you know, they'll compete in the Mountain West Conference. Is there pressure on Nico Medved next year? Like pressure saying, all right, you don't turn out a good season next year. Are we having deep conversations about the future of his about his future with Colorado State?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it would be anything like, you know, considering a coaching change or whatever. But if CSU were, you know, how many games do they win this year? 14 or whatever it was. If CSU were to win that again this coming season, it would certainly start to, I don't want to say it turn the fan base, but just lead to a lot more angst and concern about, you know, why this has happened back-to-back years. So, yeah, I mean, you know, coaches, they're under pressure every year. It's a high-pressure job. It's, you know, as Medved says all the time, it's a results business, and people aren't happy if you don't get the results. So, you know, if you know, another 12, 13, 14 type of season, win season happened, yeah, there's no doubt that there would be questions of, you know, okay, you struck gold with Roddy and Stevens, but why can't, you know, why hasn't that sustained? But again, I'll worry more about the likelihood of that type of season in June when I know what the roster looks like.
It's very true. There's still so many questions surrounding this team and what the lineup's going to look like next season. It's just kind of crazy how it goes. I mean, we were this time last year, Kevin, we're talking about, oh, can the Rams keep
him? Preseason top 25 if David Roddy was back.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, those are the things. Like, and then, you know, is Medved going to go? Is he going to find a different job? We were having conversations about several coaches in the area about that stuff. And then a season later, it's like, should we be worried about it? It's just the nature of the beast, I suppose.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. And you mentioned, you know, coaches in the region. Obviously, Linder was in that talk. Yeah. You want to talk about roster reconstruction. I think officially signed two guys, but that means they have like eight more spots to go. So, you know, I always kind of chuckle. I get, of course, fans kind of just look at their team, which totally makes sense. But there are a whole lot of teams around college basketball right now that have a lot of work to do.
A lot of teams are scrambling, no question about it. Kevin, you got to see a little scrimmage action over the weekend with Colorado State on the football side. They're knee-deep into their spring football activities, and you put up a story earlier in the week or, a couple days ago, I suppose. But just your takeaways, but also you're really focusing in on that offensive line. It seemed like they kind of blew you away.
Yeah, they had a good day, and it was pretty funny, actually. You know, we know how good this defense is. You know, could be. We know they're going to be pretty solid. We know that Mo Kamara is a really good defensive end. After a scrimmage, he goes, you know, I'm pretty mad. You know, we didn't have a very good day. He goes, you know, we didn't get the pressure that we're used to getting. And, you know, you could tell he was pretty frustrated. And I kind of said, well, Mo, you know, early in the week, you were saying, you know, there's pressure on the offense to step up. So while the defense is frustrated, from the team view, is that kind of a good thing that the offense leaned back on you? And he kind of smiles and kind of gave a, yeah, I mean, yeah, that's true. He goes, but I still don't want it to happen. I still want to dominate. But that was a good sign that, you know, a defensive end like Mo Kamara was like, oh, man, like we didn't have a great day because they kind of slowed us down. So, you know, like I wrote, it's early spring. Don't get carried away. I'm not saying this is going to be the best offensive line in the country. But it was a good early sign in the first, like, super live game type of action. So, yeah, the jury is still out. We won't know really until the actual games happen. But it's good early sign.
Well, and if you're the defense, we're talking pretty highly of this defense. I mean, we've spent a lot of time on the defense. But if you're the defense and you are just flat out dominating and you're blowing past linemen and you're getting, you know, I know they're not hitting Clay, but they're getting to him. They're just annihilating them. Yeah, in the moment, they're probably like, heck yeah, we're having fun. Then when they stop and think about it, they're like, wait a second, that was too freaking easy. Is this how it's going to go again next year? So spring ball is always, I got to think, really weird for coaches and such, because you want your offense to dominate, you want your defense to dominate. There's really no clear-cut winner in this and how you're feeling about each unit going forward.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You definitely want to have a sort of a weird mix of both of them succeeding and both struggling at times. It's It's kind of quite funny.
Yeah, no, it's weird dynamic, and I know once you get into the fall and everything, things change a little bit. But in spring, you know, it always seems like a coach is probably never going to be happy because somebody, if somebody's succeeding, that means somebody's failing on a regular basis. So we'll see. What else is sticking out to you, though? Are there any players that you're looking at going, hey, watch out for that guy? I've noticed a few things the last couple of days.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about the tight ends a little bit, and Saturday's scrimmage kind of reiterated to me that Dallin Holker, the BYU transfer, is going to be a nice player and really open up some of that intermediate passing game for CSU. So that's one that's definitely caught my eye, and obviously is hugely important because the short passing was good, the deep passing was good, but there really wasn't that intermediate range, and I think Holker is going to be a big key in changing that a little bit.
You keep hearing his name, you know, from you, yep, especially when we're out there. And I've only been out a couple of times, but you just keep hearing his name and seeing his build and everything. So that, you know, I always follow your stuff. If I'm seeing your tweets, if I'm seeing several articles in the Coloradoan kind of leaning toward this guy, yeah, I'm starting to put two and two together, man. The Rams might have a pretty darn good tight end game next season.
Yeah, he looks good. And then you have, you know, Vince Brown, 6'7" guy, and then Jordan Williams, another one like that. So you have a couple lanky tight ends too that can, you know, kind of maybe be deep seam threats or red zone threats. So you now have some pretty good receiving options in that tight end room.
Yeah, well, I'm excited about it. Kevin, what are you putting together for us, man? I know you were out there today. You had a great mailbag, a lot of questions about various topics related to Colorado State. What are you working on that we can check out?
Yeah, I have a number of pieces coming out between now and Saturday's spring game, next Saturday's spring game, sorry. This Saturday I'll have a piece on kind of what you just asked there, some of the players who have really caught the attention during spring ball here so far. I have another piece. There are three true freshmen on the team who enrolled early, high school early, to be on the team for spring here, so I have a piece on them. And they all are kind of making an impact here in spring. And then as we head into spring ball, a little bit more big picture, depth charts, and that type of stuff is coming.
I'm looking forward to it. I always love it when you can kind of get an idea, at least, of what that depth chart might look like. Kevin, appreciate you as always, my friend.
You bet. Thanks for having me.
Oh, by the way, you know, the softball thing. I mean, I'm just hearing good things. Just everything I hear is amazing.
Don't want to make too big a deal of it, but man, we had a doozy of a game Monday night. I believe the final was 31-25, so pretty good pitching and defense. extra inning affair, I had a nice little 7-for-7.
Wow.
Now I'll admit I'm not a power hitter. I'm an on base percentage guy, but man, we had some success. It was a fun night at the yard for I don't even know what our team name is, so I can't even say it.
Hey, you just got to get on base, man.
I'd show up, slap it to right field, trot to first base, and try and score.
That's all you can ask. I mean, hey, maybe the Rockies should give you a buzz. I don't know. You know, get on base. That's all they need.
Yeah, I mean, they could use a number of things. So.
Kevin, appreciate you, my man. We'll catch you up with you next week.
Thanks, Tanner.
He finally did it.
I did the reverse the last time. I had Tanner on the brain because I was going to ask you if Tanner needed some therapy help.
No, Tanner is...
poor guy.
No, he's...
My Twitter feed during Rockies games, it's basically like a therapy session of Tanner just like talking him through these games.
Oh, no question. But you talk to him, and we had a knockdown, drag-out fight today. You know, he doesn't think Nikola Jokic has the dog in him for the Nuggets, yet he swears by Kyle Freeland, and he's the greatest thing ever. And I'm like, dude, Joker's two-time MVP. PPs in the playoffs regularly, so we had a battle there.
I mean, didn't Tanner think that Chris Bryant was a good signing?
Yes, he did. Bryant had a day off yesterday before the day off, so he got some rest before his rest, so that was exciting. I'm excited about that.
Yeah, I mean, I just hope Tanner's doing okay, so I just have him on the brain of, like, he worries me during Rocky season.
He worries me a lot, but yeah, especially during Rocky season. Kevin, my man, appreciate you as always. We'll catch up with you soon.
Thanks, Bray. Catch you later.
You worried about Tanner? You know, Angel, he's tweeting pretty aggressively. He's frustrated. There's frustration there. You worried? No?
No.
Okay. Dynamite. 52 minutes after the 11 o'clock hour. We'll take a short break. It's the whole show powered by PDC Energy.
Preps Rewind. Saturday mornings at 10 on Northern Colorado's Voice. 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
This is Jenny Kavanagh from AT&T Sportsnet, your host for the Colorado Rockies. You're listening to the whole show on KFKA. Fire up the fountain.
Big one tonight for the Avs, hosting Winnipeg. And they're fighting with the Stars right now in that Central Division. They need a win tonight. They'd have 107 points if so. And then they got the Predators tomorrow on Friday. They got the Predators on Friday. The Stars have 106 points. And then they got the Blue, obviously the Blues tonight. If Dallas wins tonight and you have the Avs lose of any kind against Winnipeg, Dallas will clinch the division. And thinks, you know, there's regulation with wins and tiebreakers and stuff. So that is a big one. As long as the Avs can win tonight, they still put themselves in a position to take the Central Division here. So there's a lot to watch for. It's a big one tonight for the Colorado Avalanche. Let's tell you about Orthopedic and Spine Center of the Rockies. They provide orthopedic services for injured workers, and they understand how important it is to quickly treat workplace injuries and help you get back to work. That's Orthopedic and Spine Center of the Rockies. Check them out online at orthohealth.com. Again, that's orthohealth.com. Lunch Rush coming up next. Beer sales and Major League Baseball. The topic we didn't think we were going to be discussing, at least at this point in the season, when it came to the rule changes and how they would impact that. We'll talk about it next. Don't go anywhere. It's the whole show on Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.